Welcome to PCS Caregiving, where we discuss a variety of caregiver issues and how helping professionals can better serve military families as they PCS from their role as a spouse, friend, partner, or loved one to a caregiver. I'm your host, Rachel Browner. Join us each episode as we feature unique caregiver issues, tips, strategies, resources, and subject matter experts on this PCS caregiving journey. For those of our listeners that are not familiar with the military acronym PCS, it stands for Permanent Change of Station, and the term is commonly used in the military as service members and families transition to different duty stations. But we're using it in the context that can be useful in describing the transition military caregivers experience as they care for wounded warriors or individuals with special health care needs. Hey guys, in today's podcast, we'll be discussing social isolation and loneliness. So sit back, listen, and take notes if needed as our guest speaker, Andy Crocker, Extension Program Specialist in Gerontology and Health at Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service, discusses how isolation, loneliness, and caregiving often go hand in hand. So Andy, I recently read an article from Aging Care that mentioned loneliness may have the same impact on mortality as smoking 15 cigarettes a day, making it even more dangerous than obesity. So what is the difference between social isolation and loneliness? And can you tell us a little bit about how loneliness threatens a caregiver or anyone essentially's well-being?
Thanks, Rachel. Yeah, you know, as human beings, we are social animals. High-quality social relationships are vital for our health and well-being. And you can think about social connectedness kind of in three main roles. There are structural roles, and those are things like our social networks and our marital status. And then there are functional roles, which are things like support we receive and our perception of that connectedness. And then there are some quality issues that go into social connectedness, so social inclusion or exclusion, the quality of our relationships, and all of these things kind of get all bundled together to reflect our social connectedness, our sense of connection that results from actual or perceived support or inclusion in something. We can sometimes conflate physical distance with social isolation. And so sometimes when we say social isolation, what we actually mean is physical isolation. We are physically disconnected from someone or physically disconnected with a group. But that does not mean that we have to be socially disconnected with another person or socially disconnected with another group. We can maintain physical separation but still have very robust social connectedness. And just as a counterpoint, we can also have, you know, physical connectedness but not have any social connectedness. So sometimes it gets a little confusing because, you know, I can be in a room full of people and still feel socially disconnected from everyone there. There are differences between social isolation and loneliness. Social isolation is pretty objective. And it's a lack of social contact with others. Think about it like solitude. Think about someone who lives alone. That's probably a choice, but they are socially isolated. Whereas loneliness is more subjective. Loneliness is this feeling that you lack social connections that you need or want. So these are things like feelings of trust, closeness, affection, a sense of community, and on and on and on. But, you know, I can quantify not being able to be near another person, but I may have harder time quantifying that lack of perceived community. So they sound the same and they may be similar, but they are different on their face. It's entirely possible to feel lonely in a group of people, or to be completely alone and not feel lonely at all. Loneliness is probably something that we all feel from time to time, it only really becomes an issue when we let loneliness start to affect other aspects of our lives, when it starts to cause stress or when it starts to cause anxiety or depression. And there are a lot of physical and mental and emotional manifestations of loneliness that can arise if we let loneliness get the best of us. As you mentioned, loneliness may be similar to smoking as a cause of mortality. So there are a variety of poor physical and mental health outcomes that can come with loneliness and may even come from social isolation. If I am living alone and not motivated to, say, get physical activity because I don't really have a group that I'm connected with and things like that, maybe I'm not as physically active. Maybe my diet is poorer as a result of me being socially isolated. It can be tough to look at interventions for both social isolation and loneliness because there may or may not be just one cause for those conditions. And maybe I've chosen to live alone. Maybe I'm forced to live alone. And I may not be able to change that situation, but maybe I can change how I perceive it. Our thoughts can really affect how we view an issue that we're facing. And if I view being lonely or if I view being socially isolated as a problem, then guess what? That is going to be a problem for me. What we need to do is pay attention to our triggers. So when I'm hungry, I eat something. When I'm thirsty, I drink something. When I crave social stimulation, I need to engage myself in social stimulation. I need to, think about it like scratching an itch. Just like we all eat and drink differently, we all crave social connectedness at different levels. We need to try to engage at the level that's right for me. So I tend to be a wallflower. I'm the type of person that will walk into a room full of people and find the one person in that room that I know and go stand next to them. Even if we don't talk for the entire time we're there, I am familiar with that person, and it gives me comfort to be in that room with that person at that time. That's the level that's right for me on any given day. But for someone else, that might sound like the worst thing to ever happen to them, to go into a room full of people and stand next to the same person for the entire night. So again, find the level that's right for you and engage appropriately. One of the worst things we can do is try to engage at a level that makes us uncomfortable. I think that I need to throw myself into social activity or group activities or interconnectedness with people, and I don't want that. That can actually have just as bad effects as not engaging with people at all.
Andy, you talk about how we crave social connectedness at different levels, but it's appropriate to engage at the level that's right for that particular individual. Can you tell our audience and listeners, how does social media play a role in combating loneliness and help us feel more connected?
One of the things that people often turn to for a sense of social connectedness is online platforms. And so social media can help us feel connected to other people. Quality of that connection is not what it needs to be. So seeing something on social media or liking a post or being on a video call can help replicate some of those feelings of connectedness or provide us some momentary sensation that we're connected. But these good feelings may not last if we're not meaningfully engaging with the person. And so oftentimes we can feel like I'm connected to someone else because we're friends on a social platform, but that person that I feel connected to online, would I call them ever? Do I even have their number? Would I ever write them a note? Do I even have their address? So sometimes there's a sense of connectedness that betrays what's there in reality. Actively engaging in social connectedness via social media really hinges on that word active. And it also likely needs to include a phone call or a text message or a video chat, so that connectedness exists on many levels, not just scrolling through and seeing someone's post and feeling good about seeing that. Other things that we can do to help intervene in this feeling of loneliness is to keep our routines, to really plow through each day with some structure and organization that gives us comfort, that gives us a feeling of maybe connectedness to our day or a connectedness to a routine, or gives us some sense of stability that helps us get through the day. We also need to try to find outlets for creative expression, to do what brings us joy, to do the things that we have done in the past, perhaps, that helped us get out of a slump, that helped us maybe feel connected to the past, to even like a family tradition or a geographical tradition or something like that, but really make time to have those outlets for expression. And then also, don't discount the role that physical activity plays with overall physical, mental, and emotional health and well-being. Being outside, being in nature, engaging with nature in and of itself can actually be restorative. And so getting out there, making yourself, it can be part of your routine, but making yourself engage in some physical activity can really do a lot to help us feel connected. And who knows, maybe solve that problem of loneliness, because maybe you're waving at your neighbors as you're walking around your block, or maybe you're engaging one of your neighbors to go walking with you so that you and your neighbor can be accountable to one another. But the point is to just try to do something. Take one step. Like I said in the example of walking into the room and finding the one person, find that one person or one thing or one activity that you can do to help make that first step toward combating that feeling of loneliness. And if you enjoy being isolated, if you enjoy your solitude, then embrace that. But don't let your isolation or your solitude trick you into thinking that loneliness has to go hand in hand with that.
Support for the Military Families Learning Network is from the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Office of Military Family Readiness Policy, U.S. Department of Defense.